This is episode 418, dated Friday, June 27, 2025.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone, and welcome once again to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be here today with all of you. This is episode 418, dated Friday, June 27, 2025. Before we continue, let me introduce our good friend and colleague and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, what's going on today?
Typical Coos Bay summer day. Sunny, windy, high of about 67, 68 degrees. That's why I moved out here in part. The other reason I moved out here, of course, was to get married. That was the bigger reason. But anyway, it's a beautiful summer day here.
All right. We are, for the most part, dry and cool. After we hit 102 degrees 3 days ago, we're down to about 70. So what a major change in our weather here in New England. Before we continue, allow me to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer, who happens to be our host for today's program, because our normal hosts and crew, our production crew, is unavailable today due to other circumstances. So, Ray, I'll thank you personally right now for helping us out when we need it. It's much appreciated. I also want to thank our media sources for airing us when they do. Thank you very much. And I also want to thank Jacqueline Sylvia, our website designer, for airing our archives, or for putting our archives up on my website. All you have to do to go there to find the archive programs is go to www.brancoevents.com, arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will see most, if not all, of our archive programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
Well, history was made in the past week or so. There has been a major conflict going on in the Middle East, particularly between Israel and Iran. And we thought we would talk about it today on In Perspective. We have two guests, Jalil Mortazavi and former New York Congressman John LeBoutillier. You're very familiar with both of these guests. They've been on our program before several times, especially our congressman. He's been on a lot more than Jay. But we decided to bring them both together to talk about the conflict. Gentlemen, welcome to In Perspective.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Peter. And I'm glad to be here.
Me too. Great to be back. I can't wait to dig into this.
Before we start our conversation, Jalil, Peter and I asked you to come on because we knew that you would have a lot to say and you have a lot of knowledge about what's going on in the Middle East. But for the benefit of our listeners who don't know who you are, give us a brief background about yourself.
Well, I'm Iranian-American, and since 1976, I've been living in the United States, mostly Massachusetts. And I'm a journalist, a news commentator. I have also a YouTube program, an Instagram program in Persian language to 62 different countries that Iranian community can hear me. So most of my program deals with U.S.-Iran relation. And I'm also author, wrote two books, From Iran to America, Changes, Choices, and Challenges. And my last book was The Mystery of America. And that's about it.
So, Jay, what prompted you to leave Iran in 1976?
Well, 1976, I had a car accident, lost my eyesight. And the doctor had an operation there and didn't work out. They sent me to Mass Eye and Ear Hospital for eye operation. So when I came here and the operation wasn't successful, and my doctor here recommended me to stay here to go to rehab, because we didn't have such a program at the time in Iran, although we have many rehab schools now. So I stayed here, lived with an American family, went to Carroll Center. After the training, went to college. Then after that, I started working in WBZ Radio. And now I have my own program.
I know you have lots of sort of connections with Iran. Sort of talk about that. You talked about it a little bit. how often do you go to Iran? Who do you talk to? What are your connections with current day Iran?
Well, I talk to Iran. I have a large audience there almost on a weekly basis. The last time I was in Iran was about a week before Thanksgiving of 2024. So I'm familiar how the things work there and how the country run by religious leaders, even though they have their own election, they have their own way of democracy. And Iran, unlike other countries that most of the time they try to tell us here in the United States, is a country people free to do whatever they want under that, religious rule. Although people can come and go all the time, there are many American visited Iran throughout the years. I have never seen any American who visited Iran that they didn't like it. YouTube is full of all those things. And they had wonderful experience, terrific hospitality, loved the culture, food, and interaction with people, all of that. You can just go do whatever you want. But the funny part of the whole thing is the way that they perceived in the propaganda machine here that, in Iran, everything is horrible. And I remember one incident, Peter, this might interest you. I was on my way to Iran. This was several years ago. And I went to Logan Airport. I was traveling by myself. And there was a couple there. We sat down because we were taking the same plane to Europe. Then I have to change. Then they told me, where am I going? I said, in Iran. He said, to Iran? He said, would they let you out? I said, why not? I have return ticket back. So I had to explain to them. This couple just retired. They were professional retired. This is the first time they were leaving the United States to go to Spain, have some, retirement, 2-3 weeks vacation type of thing. You know, what I'm trying to say that the propaganda about Iran is not serving both countries at the most. So you talk to American people who have visited Iran, see what they say, their experience, because after all, and they can tell you all about it. They went there for the first time. Some of them visit there, quite often. They never felt any strange or dangerous place to be and all of that. In fact, that all they did, according to them, that they thought that they were may never get out of there. Or obviously, as soon as they get in, they may have all kind of trouble, but none of them happened. They didn't experience any of that. Just visit, just like they follow rules, just like anybody else. Well, so that's the case.
Well, what it is, Jay, is some people have a perception. They think about the politics of a country, whether we like the politics or not. And they equate that to the remainder of the country. And that's not necessarily fair. And I think that's what is being perceived.
That's exactly right, Bob. I want to talk about some of this propaganda that you mentioned. You view it propaganda, and here it's not viewed as propaganda, and that has to do with the sort of hardcore Islamic practices that these leaders, Ayatollahs, enforce. There are regular stories about women not wanting to wear the headdress, being beaten up, arrested, thrown in jail, and talk a little about that, because I think that that's germane to what we're going to be talking about very shortly. How true are those
Yes.
stories? How should we think about those things?
You see, in Iran, woman has a dress code. When they go out, they're supposed to cover their hair. And other than that, woman does just about anything, any kind of a job, from cab driver all the way to doctors, lawyers, firefighter. Woman has all kind of jobs. Some people think in Iran, women are not allowed to drive. That's wrong. They mixed up with the Saudi Arabia. Incidentally, if you compare Iran to any of those countries in the Middle East, you're going to find Iran much more open society than them. For example, in Saudi Arabia, in Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, women are not allowed to go out. If they do, they have to have a male companion, happens to be their family, and all of that. In Iran, exactly the opposite. But right now, since that woman, the dress code started, many of the women today in Iran, as I came back several months ago, they were not even using the head cover anymore. None. I mean, the government just let it go because they thought that it's just too much to handle it. They let it go. But do you hear any of that stuff here? Of course not.
Nope.
Because that's one of the things that is bad. They have to emphasize on it. You know, they suppress women and all of that. Incidentally, woman in Iranian family, believe it or not, is the head of the family. They are in charge of what's going on in the family. Family dynamic based on the culture. And so that's what it is. I mean, until and unless you go there yourself and experience it, you wouldn't understand what I'm talking about, because you heard exactly the opposite from, you know, media in this country.
Jay, when you were there most recently, you said November, I think is what you said. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Talk about how things were from your experience, because at that point, Israel and was having, you know, was at war with the Gazans and a few other other organizations. What was life in Iran? What was sort of the talk of the street? Was there any thought that what might happen today, what has happened today, might happen?
No, nobody. And the only thing that I experienced it was because of high prices. See, Iran is under the sanction. So therefore, there are lots of things that they could buy from outside because of sanction, they're not allowed. And so therefore, the obviously high cost of food and, you know, regular major item, those are the things that people were struggling, talk about, you know, prices are going high. And I told them in America it's the same. They didn't believe it either. They said, no, in America that doesn't happen, you know. So they, you know, exactly the opposite. They think that everything is here, happy-go-lucky go. I told them, no, people are complaining. That's one of the reasons, obviously, inflation and all that stuff happened that Donald Trump was elected beside, you know, immigration problem. So people basically just, you know, living day-to-day ordinary lives and all of that. And most everybody was kind of surprised that United States did not stick with the nuclear deal, because that nuclear deal was going good. Iran agreed to enrich the uranium as they prescribed, but President Trump at the time didn't think that was good enough. So that's how the whole thing started and where we are today.
Indeed. So let's, Congressman, feel free to interrupt if you want it. If you have a question, and I'm just going to sort of plow ahead, and feel free to join in.
Peter, what I was just, I mean, I'm fascinated to hear Jaleel talk about this. I think we have to bring up, and this is of no fault of the Iranian people, but the hostage crisis of 1979 and 80 into early 81 did more to poison American public opinion on Iran than anything else. And we all, those of us who are old enough to remember it, it was constant in our lives for 444 days.
Remember.
And right? And an entire news show called Americans Held Hostage, which then became Nightline, was birthed because of this thing. We never had news at 11:30 at night before, but they started that show with Ted Koppel called America Held Hostage every night for half an hour, 11:30 to 12, a network national TV show on the hostage crisis. And people were in the streets burning the Iranian flag and all that. And, you know, most Americans have never had a problem with any Iranian people they've ever met, ever, here. But most Americans couldn't find Iran on a map. They don't know. So that's what they know.
You're right, Congressman. I'm going to go back a little further than that. You're absolutely right. America held hostage Tit Coppola, as a matter of fact, became famous as a result of that. See, in back, you probably know this better than I, in the 1953, America engineered a coup d'etat in Iran and got rid of democratically elected government of Dr. Mossadegh. Exactly, Operation Ajax. I know you're going to know this better than me. Operation Ajax, obviously, see, originally, here was the story was, originally, British Petroleum, who had obviously the major owner of the Iranian petroleum company, you know, Iranian oil. When Dr. Mossadegh said that they have to know, the Iranian people has to control the oil, how much they extract it, how much they get it, how much they sell. But British Petroleum didn't want to hear any of that. It said, look, we're going to give you whatever we gave you. So when Dr. Mossadegh kicked them out and nationalized the oil, then British government came to President at the time.
Eisenhower.
I forgot his name.
Eisenhower.
No. But before Eisenhower.
Truman.
Truman. When they came to President Truman and they said, you know, they kicked us out, this is the oil, you know, they have a contract, this and that. President Truman sent somebody from the White House, his own obviously appointed person, he said, go check it out. He came to Iran, talked to Dr. Mossadegh, all of that, and he came back, told President Truman, he said, listen, British people or British government is wrong. Oil belongs to Iran. They have to negotiate with them. They can't just take over. So British government at the time that, oh, this is not going to work out because President Truman wouldn't do anything. They waited until President Eisenhower because there were two brothers at the time, you know, Dulles brother. One of them was Secretary of State.
Alan Dulles became the Dulles. Right, the head of the CIA.
John Foster Dulles, exactly. Yeah. Those two were working for a American oil company. And they said, look, we got to do something here. So they came up with this idea, we have to engineer coup d'etat, otherwise Iran will fall on Soviet Union category. And that's how they involved the United States. And ever since that coup d'etat of 1953 brought back the Shah in power, then America, U.S., overall, problem between U.S. And Iran started from that 1953, continued on and on until about 1979 that you mentioned. They had to have this religious revolution to get rid of the Shah to throw United States out. But one of the things that they made a mistake, I constantly talk about my show for a number of years, and I said to them that the worst you guys did had the hostage crisis. You could have just closed down the embassy, gave them 2 days, leave, we don't want you here. And they told me at the time, revolution, anything could go wrong. This is one of those revolutionary stuff. They didn't think it over. And that's how the whole animosity between U.S. government and Iranian government started. Other than that, there was no other thing. And, you know, people from the United States come to Iran, Iranian people come to the United States. They love to work with the American, play with the American. And that's one of the things that President Obama did, came up with this idea after 2 years negotiation with Iran, started with Oman, the same place that President Trump does. And so they came up with this idea of Iran could have enrichment program under 4% that will take care of their medical stuff, then go under the inspection, eventually they will get rid of the sanction. And that was going good until Mr. Trump came and, of course, the Israeli government and other Zionist evangelists, and so told Trump to get out of this thing. And one of the reasons they probably did because Obama was black and the black guy shouldn't do anything like that. And their boys didn't do it. So that's my opinion, Congressman. Now I'd like to hear yours.
Well, I mean, I don't disagree with most of it. I think the Iranian nuclear deal that Obama put in was the best chance to monitor what was going on in Iran. And I will assume the worst of every government, that the Iranian government did and still will always have a secret nuclear program. Because the minute you have an operational nuclear weapon, you are virtually immune from attack. No one's attacking North Korea because they have 50 to 100 nuclear weapons. They were determined for 50 years to get a nuclear bomb, and they got one. And I think Iran, the same way. They want one. The Saudis want one. Many countries want them because they protect you. And so the Iranian nuclear deal was a peaceful way to keep the risk of that from happening. Trump blew the deal up. I think Iran then accelerated their nuclear program until last Saturday when Trump bombed them. My guess is there will be people in the current Iranian government who will say we have to doubly accelerate whatever's left of it to get a bomb as soon as we can. And they probably eventually will make one.
So, Jay,
yeah,
you're probably right. Go ahead, Jay.
I think Congressman is right. See, what happened was, first of all, the way that they talk about this Iranian bomb here, that as soon as Iran going to get this nuclear bomb, they're going to attack Israel, which is false, definitely false, because Iran is not on a suicide mission. Israel has, according to some estimate, between 100 to 150 ready to go. So if Iran obviously send one bomb, they'll have it 10 of them, and the United States will come after it. So that's the false thinking that Iran gets the bomb is going to attack Israel. That's not. I don't think that they are in that mission because they know that their whole country will blow up because after all, Israel has it. U.S. will come after them. But the idea is the way that they think by keeping Iran away from this enrichment business simply because they would like to have always upper hand in Middle East, and they also would like to have a major power, and mostly Arab country has to obey because that's where they, their major source of money and oil is. But Arab country, obviously, all their money invested in the United States. So that's what they're trying to keep those people under the line. That's why they would like to have Israel as a American major hub and American major military installation right there. Other than that, Iran will never, if even they have one, they probably will be protection more than they, you know, attacking to anybody else. At least that's what most of the Iranian expert believes in that. Go ahead, Peter.
No, I'm glad you said all those things. I truly am. Your comment reminded me of sort of the wild cards we haven't talked about very much. And that has to do with the fundamentalist religionists on all sides who have this view of sort of the last days, Armageddon, whatever you want to call it. Muslims have it too. That, you know, there's going to be major struggle. They're going to win in the end. And, you know, and I think that's a major part that's sort of the elephant in the room that isn't being talked about enough, that we have these, these fundamentalist religionist types of all stripes, you know, talking about this stuff. And I think that's a major challenge.
Yeah, that is, but the whole situation is the way that I look at it, at least from different angle. For example, Russia has obviously more nuclear bomb than anybody else, according to statistic. But the Russia who attacked Ukraine and the Ukraine keep fighting, even though Russia has a bomb. Of course, obviously, they're not going to use them unless they've been threatened by a nuclear bomb. So that's what it is. Right now, the Iranian government mostly upset because they said that they were fooled by President Trump's negotiation. And then all of a sudden they got attacked by Israel because they didn't think that nobody would attack them while they're negotiating. And now that's one of the things that it started in this country. I like Congressman comment on this because it seems to me President Trump likes to do things in a Hollywood way. You know, he like John Wayne, I shoot them down and so I eliminate their project and all of that. But of course, Joint Chief of Staff of Pentagon said, no, we haven't done enough information on that. And that's why they said, no, they didn't eliminate it. They're probably going to hold on a few months or maybe a year. In fact, that one of the Harvard professor wrote it on foreign policy. He said, oh, they probably delayed the Iranian nuclear program between 3 to 6 months. That's it. Not much. And now they're not going to trust with any negotiation with the United States. That's where it ended up being, even though in this country, according to the statistic that came out from all directions, everybody was against attacking Iran because obviously Iran was negotiating, wasn't doing anything, wasn't fighting with anybody. They were just negotiating. So why this happened the way that it happened, that all had to do with what's going on in Washington. Am I wrong, Congressman?
No, well, I think you're right. Now, a couple points, too. You mentioned Russia and Ukraine and that Russia has nuclear weapons and probably wouldn't use them. Well, guess what, folks? When the Soviet Union fell apart in 1990 and 91, and the republics, including Ukraine, split apart and became sovereign countries, Ukraine had nuclear weapons on the territory of Ukraine. They were Soviet nuclear weapons that were kept in Ukraine. And Ukraine voluntarily surrendered them, gave them up as part of the deal to become an independent sovereign country. I bet you they've regretted it ever since. If they'd kept some of those bombs, this invasion by Russia may never have happened, number one. Number two, the other thing we haven't mentioned, we're already halfway through the show already, is the specter of possible regime change in Tehran. And Bibi Netanyahu, since last fall, in many public comments, has said, and this is almost a direct quote, quote, regime change is coming in Iran and sooner than anyone can anticipate, unquote. What do you think? You think it's possible?
As a matter of fact, it happened exactly the opposite. Because most of the time, when people in Iran or any other country, actually, if they think some foreign element and foreign country, especially Iran, had experience with it in 1953, you know, regime change, obviously, Dr. Mossadegh, you remember that. So therefore, they rally behind these religious people. And they said that if they're going to change government, it will be us and not anybody else, especially somebody who's bombing us and many innocent people got killed. Now we're going to obey his thinking that we're going to do a government change. No, I don't see it because according to what I talk to enough people in Iran, it went exactly the opposite because people at the time of trouble always rally behind their leadership.
Right, right.
What happened in 9/11?
But what I was thinking was happening was they killed all the military leaders and the head of the Quds Force and Republican Guards and all that. And I think the Israelis have heavily penetrated the Iranian government heavily. That Mossad knows an awful lot about where these people live, what they're doing, where they travel, what bunkers they hide in. They really know what's going on. They, after all, a year ago, at the inauguration of the new Iranian president, Mossad was able to assassinate the top Hamas representative who was there in a government guest house for the inauguration.
You're right. I was there. I was in Iran at the time. That's correct.
Right. And they only blew up the room he was in. I mean, that's the level of penetration they have. And I just wonder.
That's right.
Is there a domestic element, not Israeli, not American, not the West? Is there a domestic Iranian force that wants to overthrow a weakened government of Iran? Is that what Netanyahu is talking about?
Right. Netanyahu thought that what happened, then the people will just rise up on the street to change the government, take over. That didn't happen. Probably won't happen. Although most Iranians definitely would like to change the government, you know, in their own way. In other words, to have more authority on the secular government rather than with religious one, even though Iranian society is somewhat, you know, traditional and religious by definition. We have obviously strong history and culture. You know, Iran is over, 5,000 years old country, and the country, of course, even today, are 17 largest country in the world, land-wise and population-wise. We have 92 million people, and they are Shiite, which is another sect of Islam, just like the Catholics and Protestants. So Netanyahu wishful thinking didn't come up, because obviously people were just devastated with what happened, because Iran, they didn't think they provoked such a thing, and they thought that U.S. just tricked them to negotiate while Israeli preparing to attack. So therefore, it wouldn't have come any good time at all. In fact, people were just mad.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wish that people would remember history. 9/11 here. If somebody had said to us, it's time to change your government. Your government's done lots of evil things in the Middle East, which is why they attacked us in the first place. And they did attack us. It was a terrible attack, and it shouldn't have happened. I'm not defending that attack at all. But can you imagine what our country would have said if the ruler of Saudi Arabia said, you folks need to have a new government. You've been doing bad things around the world. You need to change your government. Can you imagine what would happen? And why would you think it's any different in Iran? I just find the whole thing just utterly ridiculous. That rant is over. I want to ask you, Jay, we here in the United States, I'm sure you've heard this too, hear a lot about the impact that the attacks have had on Israeli civilians. You know, I have a friend of mine, a virtual friend who lives in Israel, and we hear about his trauma, and it's a traumatic thing they're going through, in air raid shelters and so on and so forth, and loud noises and anxiety, and it's terrible stuff. But what we haven't heard, at least I haven't heard, what's going on in Iran? I mean, Iran has been attacked. What are you hearing? Well, how are things over there? Talk about what you think is going on in Iran with this.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. In Iran is the same way. People just trying to go some places that they will not be near any military installation or any kind of a government office. They just try to, some of my family even went to north near Caspian Sea. So they'll be around that area. And, some stores closed down because, they just opened limited during the day. People could do the shopping. But overall, Iran is a big country, and it's not like Israel is small. In Israel, obviously, people were more devastating because they couldn't move around. Even, I read a report in Jerusalem Post, Israeli government didn't allow anybody to go out and freely report it or take picture and any of that stuff and send them out. And so according to some commentator in Iran, they thought that President Trump came to rescue Israel because Israel couldn't continue on for a long period of time because they like to finish things in weeks to 10 days. And so this was going more than that. Then they came and bombed the Iranian military site with the Richmond and all that. That's created more problem in this country than any place else.
Well,
because
I was
President
at the time,
Trump said he finished it.
Yes? Jay, they were also saying at the time Israel couldn't penetrate the nuclear system in Iran. And that's why one of the reasons why the U.S. came in to help out. Is that
sure.
True?
What I'm saying right now that Mr. Trump said, we eliminate everything. His own general says, no, we haven't. We have to check. And now in this country, every day, I wish they said to forget it. Don't talk about it. Now the CNN thinks that Trump is just, being ridiculous about it. Nobody knows if he's done anything. And the Trump thinks that these media obviously loser, this and that, all of that. It seems to me that created more problem in this country, the media war, than in Iran. And then they said, we want to negotiate. Then the Iranian government said, right now, we don't want any negotiation. We have to figure it out, see what we're going to do next. So they're trying to obviously analyze this whole thing, but I don't think they will be in the mood or ready to negotiate with the United States for some period. I'm sure they probably will sometime, but I don't think the way that President Trump talks about that, it won't happen soon.
You want to throw it open for questions, Bob?
Yes. Before I do, I want to say hi to three faithful listeners who have written notes about our program, Raymond Irving, Terry Winnott, Bob Acosta. Thank you very much for listening to our program, and keep listening.
This is In Perspective. He's Bob Branco. I'm Peter Altschul. Welcome, and thanks for listening.
All right, and we do have someone with their hand raised already. Phone number ending in 388.
It's Mitch Pomerantz calling from Pasadena, California.
Hi, Mitch.
Good afternoon, and let me say for the record quickly, I am a never-Trumper. But I must say, Jaleel, we're going to disagree as we did a previous time we talked. During the time I was ACB president, and I think it was about 2012, one of our affiliates invited a blind professor from Iran. I don't recall if it was the University of Tehran or not. But at the time, ACB Media was ACB Radio. This gentleman was invited to come and be interviewed on ACB Radio, and he said absolutely not. He would not be in a public forum. He was afraid for his livelihood and for his career and perhaps even his life because of the government. My second comment is that even though the other Arab countries have paid mild lip service to Israel's actions against Iran, secretly they are saying nothing. They are happy with what is happening over there, and perhaps it has more to do with most of them being Sunni Muslims rather than Shia. But the fact of the matter is that if the other nations in the Middle East were that angry over what was going on, you'd hear a lot more, and you haven't. They're pleased at what's going on. Now, I have a quick question. We have a friend in our Lions Club who came here after the revolution. He is an American citizen. His wife is dying. They went to Iran in May to see their family that is still there, and we are very concerned for his safety because he is now an American citizen, albeit he grew up in Iran. Do you have any information as to whether Iranian Americans are being detained or held over there. And thank you.
Thank you, Mitch. First of all, let me begin by saying to you, Mitch, that Iranian professor who obviously didn't want to interview, he probably will either works for University of Tehran that has to be cleared because that's a government university. That might be because he probably didn't know what kind of media he was talking in the United States. And the other thing, most Arab government who told President Trump, and also they made this statement, they did not want to have any war in the area because their business need is stability. And the war is always against stability. And the President Trump going to have a business there. Already his children started Saudi Arabia, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, and Qatar happens to be very close with Iran. So is Oman. That's all Persian Gulf country. They didn't want any war around them because obviously war usually now look at all of their airline cannot fly anywhere in the past 2 weeks. That costs money, obviously. But in terms of being Iranian American visiting, no, I haven't heard anybody. And if anybody from the United States, I'm a U.S. citizen, and I go back and forth at least once a year or every other year, I had no trouble at all. In fact, I know many Iranian-American visit. They are my listeners. I talk to them all the time. And no, I haven't heard anything unless you obviously going there for some other intention and or just like somebody who they've been arrested, people who worked for Mossad. Mossad is obviously intelligence service of Israel, and so if anybody works for them, if they capture them, no question, they'll be in jail. And in terms of your friend, no.
Jalil, is that still the case since the beginnings of hostilities, though? That really does change the equation.
What hostility?
Well, what's going on between Israel and Iran? That's changed the equation in terms of and the bombing of the atomic the nuclear facilities. That's kind of changed the equation, and wouldn't to me that would put Iranian Americans at some risk now since
no, it's providing. I know, but providing that if they haven't done anything wrong and they're visiting back and forth, why would them? If that person has nothing to do with the war, has no intention involve anything else, I don't see any problem at all. Well, unless, as I said, they work for Israel. That's another story.
He went over because his wife is dying.
With respect, so. I sent you and the congressman and Bob an article, which you haven't a chance to read yet, from CNN. And one of the things the article talked about was just what Mish is talking about. There's a higher level of anxiety amongst the Iranian government, you know, for obvious reasons. And if I were American, I would be nervous too. I mean, I get your point, but I think, you know, since the bombing, it's like anything else, you know, if we are going to attack a country, then obviously anybody who's in that country is going to be more risk. It's the same thing here too. You know, you remember how it was on September 11th, how some Muslims were attacked for no good reason. You know, the same thing could happen there too. And so, you know, I pray, Mitch, obviously we all do that you're, you know, that everything works out, but I'd be uncomfortable if I were in his shoes.
Jalil, I hope we get a chance to meet in person someday. We could, over a beverage of our respective choices, we could sit and have a nice civil conversation about our disagreements and hopefully have a good get together.
Thank you. I'm glad. I'll be glad to do it. Mitch, so far we are having civil conversation. Just disagreement, whatever it is. This is politics. Or
sure.
Some misunderstanding. No, I have no problem at all. I'd be happy to talk to you anytime, any place.
Very good. Well, I'll move on. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for your contribution.
Right. Next up, we have Robert Acosta.
A most interesting discussion. I'm glad to see my favorite congressman present. I'm looking forward to voting for him anytime. But my question is this. The problem is perception. I believe your name is Jay. The way you painted out, oh, Iranians love us. We're great. And we love them. That's what I'm hearing. But what about, doesn't the Ayatollah make it difficult when he says America's with the devil, with Satan, and so forth, and then you know who, a guy named Trump, uses it. In other words, is there a struggle between religion, the religious approach that we're with Satan, according to the Muslims or Iranians, versus honest politics? This is what we have to face with you know who as president. The things that he says, and they go, what he meant was, I hope I'm clear on my question. Is the Ayatollah still saying we're with the devil and we're going to kill America?
Well, death to America, right? You hear that all the time in news reports here.
Right. In fact, that one of the things that President Trump, for his credit, says, he said from now on, we have to watch what they do rather than what they say. Because those death to America became
a
slogan.
That's good.
Yes. So therefore, in terms of animosity between the religious leaders and the United States government, definitely, because they think that they cannot trust the United States. Look what happened. They've been negotiating. All of a sudden, they were bombed. So why would they trust them anymore? Because they asked us to come for negotiation. That's what we came to negotiate. I'm sure Congressman would appreciate to elaborate on this because he was in the Congress at one time. He knows all about it.
Well, you know, here's what human nature tells me, that inside the Iranian government, since the 12 days of bombing by Israel last Saturday night by the United States, there is going to have to be some sort of revenge by the Iranian government without their footprints on it. And they've done this all over the Middle East until Israel wiped out Hezbollah, pretty much wiped out Hamas, is wiping out as best they can the Houthis in Yemen, took down Assad in Syria. And each of these proxies of the Iranian government have been wiped out. And but there's still terrorism. And the Iranian government, this is not the Iranian people, this is the Iranian government, are the experts at international terrorism and have done it for 45 years. And I have to think what's coming is some payback against the United States without certain Iranian footprints and fingerprints on it. That's my immediate worry about now.
It may take 2 years.
Yeah, I would worry about it too. And, there has been some talk about it in Washington. As a matter of fact, they said there are about 350 illegal Iranian who came in this country, just like any other people who are here right now.
Secret
cells.
In the
past year or so.
They call them secret cells.
Right. Because that's right. They already been captured in the United States and they are obviously in detention center and they will not be released until they deport him back home. And these people came in the past year or so. That's what I read.
Yeah, well, we don't know what they would do. Hopefully we're ahead of it. We prevent it from happening. But, you know, in years past, airplane hijackings, shooting down commercial airplanes, kidnappings, hostage taking. Remember in the 80s, the Americans were being taken hostage in Lebanon all the time, and
right,
including the CIA station chief. But they were held by Iranian proxies in Lebanon. And to get them out, we had to negotiate with Iran to get them out. So
that's true. They were part of the Hezbollah. You're right.
Yep. So I don't think what happened the other night. Now, Trump, on the way back after we bombed Fordo, and I think we should quickly mention one thing. South of Denver, is a gigantic mountain called Cheyenne Mountain. And 60 plus years ago, we hollowed out Cheyenne Mountain and put NORAD in there, the headquarters of our North American Air Defense, to withstand a direct Soviet nuclear blast. We put it under this mountain, hollowed it out, reinforced it, the whole bit. Now, the Iranians are smart. They know about Cheyenne Mountain. They undoubtedly, when they built Fordo to put their centrifuges down there, they probably knew how Cheyenne was built, and they probably built even better than Cheyenne, with better building materials and all that. And it's possible.
As a matter of fact, Congressman, you point out something very interesting. I asked a couple of the engineers who listen to my show. They know a great deal about. I said, listen, why did they put that there? And they told me they know something about the engineering. They said they did that on purpose underneath that mountain. They knew it. Then if one day, if they ever been protected, it will be that mountain. Because that mountain is a full of rock.
Yep.
And so therefore, underneath it, they have done it. That's exactly right. I never thought about it. Now you mentioned that was the intention. That's exactly what they did. Now they know they were doing the right thing.
So if, you know, Trump correctly announced to the country at 10 o'clock Saturday night, we just bombed Fordo, and he went too far, as is typical of Trump. It's always the greatest thing or the worst thing. And oh, we've obliterated their nuclear program. Well, we don't know that yet. We don't know if those bombs totally annihilated Fordo or didn't even get to down deep enough through the rock where the centrifuges are. We don't know. No one knows yet. The Iranians probably
Right.
Maybe the Israelis can intercept Iranian radio traffic when they're trying to find out what the status is 300 feet underground. I have no idea. But the idea that we're going to have an argument in America over whether or not we've wiped out their nuclear program, I can tell you right now, we have not wiped it out. Because a country that's determined to build a nuclear weapon is not having all of their stuff in any one basket. They're putting their eggs in many baskets, and we don't know where every basket is.
The common joke is we didn't put our eggs to Trump's basket. That's what they said to me.
Anything else, Robert?
No, I'm just fascinated. Thank you.
Just to let you guys know, we have someone ending in with phone ready in 972.
That's Glenn from Brighton, Massachusetts.
Glenn, star 6 to unmute, and then you may ask your question.
Yeah, now I'm going to tell you, I'm an always Trumper. However, this weekend scared me. You know, he took a gamble. It scared me, but I'm glad that it worked out. I'm glad that there's a ceasefire, but I'm still scared of the sleeper cell payback that we may get from this. We don't know that every sleeper cell is gone. Just like I agree with John, we don't know that all the nuclear stuff is gone. I mean, how do we know?
We don't know.
I'm with you on that. On this one, I'm with you.
Yeah. By the way, one other thing that's
all that next year is our 250th birthday celebration. Do a terrorist attack? What a good time to do it. I hope it doesn't happen, but I'd be really worried if I were security next year.
Good point.
By the way, I was just going to throw one other thing in for historical reference that's good to realize that Jay will recognize that in all the years of the Shah's reign, so that's 50s, 60s, 70s, the relationship between Iran and Israel was very good. And then came the revolution in 79. And believe it or not, even after the, and we should mention, there were a population of Iranian Jews in Iran who, lived a good life in that regime. And Israel and Iran got along. And remember, those of you who don't realize it, they are not an Arab country. They're Persian. Different people, different history, a different attitude towards Arabs too. And then came the revolution. Ayatollah Khomeini takes over, and we're in the 80s. And believe it or not, even in the 80s, there was a relationship between the Israeli government and the Iranian government. And they did deals together, including that whole hostage thing that I mentioned in Lebanon, remember, and the Iran-Contra thing. That was done. Israel was a part of that, of all things, shipping missiles to the Iranian government, giving missiles from America to Israel, to Iran. And now here we are 40 years later, and they're shooting missiles at Iran instead of giving them to them. That shows how much things have now changed.
So what caused that in the beginning?
What caused what?
And why all of a sudden Israel and Iran, what created the...
I'll tell you what it was, and I know we're running out of time, but the biggest mistake we've made in the last 30 years, I think, was the invasion of Iraq and the takedown of the Saddam government. Not that Saddam wasn't horrible. He was. But for 8 years, he and Iran were at war with each other, draining each other, spending all their energy on each other. The minute we took down Saddam, took down the Iraqi government, boom, Iran was free to spread their stuff into Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, West Bank, Gaza, everywhere. And they became the most malicious, malign force in the Middle East. And that has radicalized the Israeli government, especially after October 7th. After that happened, that was it. The Israeli people said, screw it. We're not going to be friendly towards anybody anymore. We're not going to have sympathy for the Palestinians. We'll just wipe them out. And they've become a radical government.
Congressman, you're right on that. There's a book written by James Bell called The Eagle and the Lion, U.S.-Iran Relation. The reason they did that at the time when the Iran-Iraq war going on,
they called it
dual containment.
Yep.
Israeli decided to help Iran, and American helped the Iraqis.
Iraq.
Trying to have them go after each other.
Yep.
And then they, for their own benefit, not so much helping Iran, but they didn't want Iraq to win either. That was the reason, because of the balance of the power. However, this went on and on to the point that Isaac Rabin came prime minister, and guess who assassinated him? One of the radical Jew killed him because he wanted to have a state relation, having two-state solution between the Palestinian and Israelis. They never mentioned this, and that was a terrorist Jew who killed Isaac Rabin, which started this whole thing.
Gentlemen, we are out of time, unfortunately. It was a fast show. We'll have to do this again in the near future. I think we're learning a lot about what's going on, and hopefully in the end, things will be peaceful. That's what we all hope for.
I think we need to pray for the peace of the Middle East. I think that's the best we can do right now.
That's without a doubt, Peter. You're absolutely correct. Jalil Mortazavi, former New York Congressman John LeBoutillier, it's always a pleasure having you both on the program. And thank you very much, and thank you, Raymond, for hosting today, and everybody else. Everybody go safe with God's abundant blessings, and have a great week.